Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. We are live at Library Square. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center and in the studio for our 200th episode. Dan Woo! McKay on the right.
Hey, good morning, Natalie.
And Jim DeBacchus on the left.
We made it 200.
And
amazing.
We've got a special guest for the 200th episode.
It's not special.
Speaker Greg Hughes joins us in the studio.
It's very special. I'm so happy to be here and so happy to outnumber Jim DeBacchus.
We're ganging up on it.
We've brought sanity to the show.
Three conservatives against one.
Yes.
Really flaring liberal.
It's going to be nice to be actually able to take you to task today, Jim.
Shooting fish in a barrel. Here we go.
We got a speaker who's only speaker because he got famous on this show. He comes back.
I rode the coattails to both sides of the aisle. I will come clean. It is true.
I will tell you, Dan, and you may remember this. I've told you this before, but the speaker, as he was in that race to become speaker, would bring different members of the House into the studio to just kind of be part of the vibe here.
Yeah,
I think it is part of how you got the speakership.
I think so. I think there's a lot of SWAT going on around here. You know, we were award winning. I don't know if you've won an award since, but we certainly won an award.
Oh, we won awards.
We got second to Fabrizio.
Award. Yeah.
Oh, please. Yeah. We owned the broadcasting awards when I was on the show. So anyway.
Guys,
we don't use words with eight syllables the way Doug does consistently.
Yeah, that's true.
But he
guys, 200th episode, helped. Let's take just a second and remind our listeners what started this show. And Jim, you were right at the center of it. I think the speaker was as well. Tell us the story.
Well, there's a national show called...
We don't even remember it. Left, Right,
Left, Right, and Center, yeah. And I thought, you know, we could do that locally. And I first asked Greg because I just think he's a terrific entertainer. You know, he's wrong on all the
spirited
issues, but I don't know anybody who doesn't like Greg Hughes except for Herbert. You know,
and I got plenty of enemies.
He'd be fun, and he wasn't famous then, and he said, sure, I'll do it. And then, but we couldn't think of a moderator. And I think it was you or maybe Matt Lyon who said, well, let's ask Natalie. And I didn't know her, and she came in and I've never seen anybody take to broadcasting the way she did.
All I know is I got a call from Jim, and he said, "We're doing this political talk show. Would you like to be a moderator?" And I don't like that I'm a moderator, right? I represent a point of view here, the center, by the way.
Yes.
But I went to my dean, Taylor Randall, at the Eccles School, and said, "I don't think I should do this. Too political. Not really me. I'm more policy." And my dean said, "Do it."
Yeah.
So it's been fun. And then we got Dan on the show.
Yeah, one of my favorite elements, and this is a little known fact, but when Greg was running for speaker, he sat down with, you know, he sits down with every member of the body to ask him for their vote, that kind of thing. And he sits down and he says, "What do you think I should do?" And I'm like, "Man, I don't know how you should stay on both sides of the aisle, because I don't know how you can be speaker and be the point of news and at the same time be talking about the news and be out in front of the body."
Little did I know he was, you know, shilling for a job.
That
okay?
is not
I had
the
no
way.
Idea.
That's why he was.
Yeah.
No,
he said, he calls me a couple of weeks after he becomes speaker and says, "Hey, by the way, I don't think I can do this show anymore. I think it's on you." So.
Well.
I don't think, well, okay, I was trying to bump him off, but that's because this show, you saw how famous it did for him.
Dan
Look what.
Has done a great job.
I would expect
he did well in assigning.
He had radio experience as well. He's been a
so
radio host.
I'm
before.
The only one that hasn't. Jim, we are live on Facebook as well, and I think you should remind our radio listeners that what's going on live Facebook in the studio. We're lit up. Tell us.
Yeah,
10,000 viewers. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you could go to Senator Jim DeBacchus, and we're saying hi to everybody. So we're glad to have you. And I don't understand why there isn't another radio station in the state of Utah that picks up this show. What's that public station in Logan? Or what? This is a...
Jim, this is where we sniff our own fumes.
Yeah, well, no, we need to syndicate, and then I need some royalties, okay? That's what needs to happen here. Come on, people, let's get going.
Our listeners want to hear some news.
All right, let's go.
Let's go in, and I'm going to start with Harvey, with the hurricane. That's what all the, you know, networks are spending time on. Don't exactly know the Utah angle. I do know that there's been some, I think, a Black Hawk helicopter loan from the National Guard. I know that there's been a lot of nurses and doctors that have gone to the place. I also know the LDS Church has sent a couple of truckloads of water and supplies. Greg, is there something the state can do here to be helpful to
there
a
is, you know,
I mean,
there,
a it, state like
you know,
this?
I think it's a great example of when you see a natural disaster like this, the whole country really does come together, and our National Guard has been mobilized. I think we've sent helicopters there. We have crews that specialize in these disaster situations that we have sent down there as well. And we're not alone. I mean, Utah is one of many states that there is such horrific, carnage going on in terms of that rain. The rain has not stopped. I mean, to see that entire city of Houston underwater the way it is, it's shocking. But yeah, Utah has engaged heavily on this.
I've heard the word earthquake more in the last few days than I had for a long time, where the state kind of reconciles that we too could have difficult problems. Jim, you think anything from the left on this?
I mean, one of the things that struck me as you talk about Utah, and you know, I have my problems with 0.5% alcohol and some other stuff, but the difference between that mega church guy with his 17,000 seat arena and
empty.
And his $10 million a year salary, and he didn't want all those people in his big gracious
palace.
And I watched at the beginning, and this so typifies LDS people. They're just rolling up their sleeves. The ward house is there. There's canoes going by. I saw that video posted by LDS people. And it's exactly what you want from neighbors. And it's not with all the glitz and all the rest. So as we talk about local response, hats off to the LDS Church. Now let's look at that 0.5 alcohol. But nonetheless,
that was an incredible segue, Jim. That was amazing.
He's going to fit public lands in just a
minute. Medicaid expansion.
I saw an image of a long, long line in Houston, and I assumed it was a line for services, and it was a line of volunteers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that says
it
all right
cool.
there.
That's cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dan, I want to get your feedback just as I throw the mic over to you. When I worked in Washington, D.C., Katrina happened, and I remember Secretary Leavitt made several visits to Katrina, and I remember a comment that someone made. He said, you know who I really am grateful for? Two groups, the LDS, something called the LDS, and the Mormons.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's always amazing. All things being considered, it's amazing how the country comes together around a tragedy, right? Mm-hmm. It happens in any family. Anytime there's a problem with a family, you know, you guys see each other at Christmas, you know, something. But as soon as there's some kind of tragedy in the family, it's amazing how quick people show up. And it's one of the things I love about America is at the end of the day, when there's a tragedy, when there's a problem or some national calamity, everybody jumps in. I love you see the photos of, you know, Oklahoma has their own gas and power company. They're sending people directly to Texas so they can help get people's gas and power back on.
Yeah.
It's the influx of service. The roads were actually busier going into Houston than they were going out. And it was people coming in with boats, people coming in with relief supplies. It was amazing.
Yeah, really interesting.
One final, and I know we shouldn't talk about this, but I was listening to NPR this morning.
Here comes the public land pitch.
Here it comes.
They did a story that just moved my heart. It was a woman whose job it was to protect a hotel parking lot. She was a watch person, probably not making much above minimum wage. And she stayed the 3 days. She hadn't been to her house. She said, I have a responsibility. There's cars here. Somebody needs to make sure that these people are okay. So the reporter said, let's go to your house, because she hadn't been there, if you can imagine. So they got within this far from the house, and they couldn't go any further. And a guy came along with one of those giant pickups. The tires are bigger than most people. And they got aboard. And the neighbors and the devastation was all there. And as this lady, as they opened the door to her house, it hadn't been touched. And I was touched by the dedication of so many American people. If we could concentrate on that instead of all the differences, imagine where
things
America
could happen.
Would be.
Yep. Yeah. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm with Dan McKay, Jim DeBacchus, and Greg Hughes. Just as we close out this segment, we got a lot of great news in the second segment. I just want to mention that my mayor passed away, Richard Iyer, the mayor of Murray, went to his viewing last night. What an incredible man. There's something about having someone die while they're in public service and seeing their casket flanked with men in uniform, which is what the city did last night. And so I just wanted to do a shout out to this great man. In our next segment, we got lots of news coming. Stay tuned.
Dan McKay on the right.
Gary Herbert on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. And we have as our guest, I'll let him introduce himself,
Speaker Greg Hughes, joining as a guest host on the all-too-familiar Both Sides of the Aisle. Happy to be back for the live 200th program.
And are you in the productive middle or are you on the right?
I'm productive in any place that I'm at.
I love it.
Natalie, I'm always productive.
As we say, put a nickel in Hughes, you get a dollar's worth of whatever it is you're asking for.
Whatever you're looking for.
Let's go through some news. We've got our good governor, Gary Herbert, in search of the world's best pho. in Vietnam.
Can you say that again, Natalie? I don't know that. Maybe that's too much information. I don't know. I'm a little uncomfortable by that search. I don't know.
He's on a trade mission in Vietnam. Good thing.
I do love pho, so you caught me off guard.
I'm here with three legislators. What is the value to the state of this trade mission, guys?
Okay. Don't do that. Crickets.
I've been on trade missions before. There's some good things that happen. Do I have to defend this?
There's goodwill, you know, that goes with the state building out. And honestly, I will say this. When I lived in India for my 2-year religious sabbatical, people would ask me, where do you live? Or where, you know, where are you from? And my companions would say, I'm from Utah. And most of them, they say, well, is that near California or near New York? That's pretty much the center of the universe.
So he's out, you know,
so he's out there
people.
Proselyting for Utah, and in that respect, I think that can be helpful.
Jim, you want to make a
comment?
That's
good. It keeps him out of Salt Lake.
I will tell you this. I think, you know, it's if you go on a trade mission, it's very important public policy. When I've been overseas and talking to companies and corporate relocations here, it's always been junkets. I'm always getting accused of being on some, you know, high-wheeling junket. But I will tell you this. We have Switzerland. We went there. We looked at mountain transportation. We have Stadler Rail. It's the largest rail car manufacturer in Europe. Their North American headquarters is here in Salt Lake.
And they manufacture.
And exactly.
These are
good
jobs.
And the, great jobs. And they, but for meeting people and public officials, public servants, those in the industry from Utah, this would not have been. It was Dallas and Savannah, Georgia that were in competition for their headquarters. And they came here. And it was because of these kinds of missions or trade missions that we go out and dialogue.
There's value in pressing the flesh.
I like a state that looks outward. And so I'm from the political center. I support these trade missions. But what I want to see is I want to see 3 or 4 trade missions a year to rural Utah, domestic trade missions. I want to see taking urban business leaders and going into Green River and saying, you know, where could we have partnerships? Where could we extend our business?
We learned mightily. We did a legislative trip this summer, and I think that many of us along the Wasatch Front and suburbanites and those that live in Salt Lake City, we learned a lot about the economies of scale and how small and how impactful those jobs are in our rural areas of Utah.
Jim, Greg mentioned Stadler Rail. We have an issue right now with the Airport Tracks line. I don't know how much you know about it, but I sit on the airport board. I know a little bit about it, but the plan was to have first-class service for rail people. I'm using an airline term, first-class, meaning that they would come into the terminal and just have a great introduction to our airport, make it really convenient. Turned out we didn't have the money to do that. Lots of plans. Jim?
So the
as a former
terrific
UTA board nominee or whatever Jim was.
Yeah, that was
short. How about Jim? I wasn't on this program when you were going through that. I was watching that go on. That was a...
That was so much
fire.
Fun.
What in the world?
It was the best thing in the world. Can you imagine? What if I would have had to go to all that stuff? So I'm not happy. But the plan was
what if
UTA,
he'd have been accountable? Can you imagine that?
UTA spent a lot of money coming up with a first-class, amazing system that comes right to the airport. So then they were talking about a plan preposterously because nobody would pay for it. Where you would get out like 2 or 3 football fields away from the end of the thing, grab all of your luggage and have to walk to a terminal? Yeah. I mean, it was just impossibly dumb. And the price tag on it was ridiculously high. It looks like now smart people have got together. We're going to solve both problems and we're going to do it at a reasonable price. And that's what government ought to do.
The economist in me, and I think Dan would be right with me, maybe Greg as well, but I would love to see a surcharge on long-term parking to pay for this.
Oh, interesting.
I'll get in trouble for saying that.
As a long-term parker, I don't love that idea, but I totally
understand.
As they
are reconstructing, I think it's $1 zillion a day right now in that structured parking area. I don't know what they're doing. I think they're making their money on the
parking
alone.
It's actually $32 a day, which I just recently paid.
But you're seeing the economist in me because, you know, you want to incentivize the behavior you want. We want people taking rail.
In that respect.
And so we place incentives correctly, and we can have less long-term parking and more rail
we
use.
We do have some of the least expensive long-term parking in the country.
$32 a day is cheap.
No, that's short-term.
But that short-term
recovery. This is the Cadillac liberal who knows that he just goes to short-term.
He lives
and pays
like a Republican but feels guilty like a Democrat.
Can we reminisce a little bit about the program? Remember that, Natalie, remember the day when he was so mad about an issue, he was willing to fly commercial to D.C. to really sort it out? He was ready to get on a commercial airline. That was when it got real.
That's
it got real when Jim was ready ready to go commercial instead of his private jet. I was astounded by that kind of commitment.
Speaker Hughes, we had a news break in the last 24 hours about food tax. It just is so interesting to me. You were so close. It seemed like I'm not up on the hill to putting the sales tax all the way back on food last session. And now you've got an interim, a proposal to take it completely off, and it got some momentum. It feels like there's twirling going on, like there's not a sense of direction.
Yeah. There needs to be our tax system is based on a very different economy than we have in 2017. And we are much more of a service-oriented economy now, of which we don't have any tax base. Coming from that, I thought that one of the low-hanging fruit reforms that we could pursue was restoring the tax on food, lowering the base of sales tax, so revenue neutral. But when we did the modeling, it did not make a dime's difference. Yeah. And we've all been told that that was narrowing the base and making it more volatile. Restoring that tax on food, lowering the overall sales tax, as we modeled that out, it did not change the revenues at all.
Dan, you're a tax policy guru, but whenever we talk tax policy, it gets really boring real fast on this program.
Yeah, Channel 2 did a story on this. I interviewed for this yesterday, and they were really talking about, look, the test for whether or not food is going to be taxed comes down to whether or not it was planned for nutrition or not for nutrition. If you buy one donut and you plan to consume it immediately, 7%. You buy a dozen donuts, and it's to share, basically, it's 3%. So you can see why there's problems in our tax system in the way that it's set up as far as food is concerned, that enough people are saying, well, does it either need to be this complex? I think it needs to be applied to all or to none, and I haven't made up my mind which way
I go. Oh, something dramatic happened yesterday at this interim
Were you in the meeting?
Yeah, we were in there together. It was seven hours of Chairman Stevenson. It was like, you know, and I love Howard.
Hughes starts laughing immediately because we've all been through 7 hours of Stevenson.
We're talking Howard Stevenson.
Yes, I love Howard.
Senator Stevenson.
He's my favorite senator. So we're sitting there, and it was gamed to put the sales tax all the way up. That's what they thought was going to happen. But the members of the committee got a hold of that. They took the documentation. And I'll tell you, we had just gone through and kind of said, yeah, we're going to give another $200 million a year.
$122 million.
Plus another $72 that was new.
Sure, sure.
So guys, $200 million to mining industry and manufacturing.
I know.
So anyway, we're going to take the sales tax off
It does get boring when you talk about it. And this is my area of specialty and what I teach at the university.
This looks totally painful.
Just have to point out to the liberal in the room that, you know, the best way to help low-income people is to target to them. And when you do it with sales tax on food, you're affecting everybody. So I just want to challenge you to keep thinking about how, if you want to help low-income, do something that's very targeted to them. Don't give everybody a tax break to help a few.
That has been my point on the food issue.
Okay. But then we're stuck with a bureaucracy. They had it.
The liberals going to talk about bureaucracy.
The state is going to set up this whole thing.
It just goes all the way around, and now we have Senator Dabakis lamenting bureaucracy.
Since we're talking about taxes, and we don't want to be boring, if we didn't talk about
Take the sales tax off of food. It's the most regressive tax there is. Everybody
it wouldn't be right to have a both sides of the aisle without talking about our good president Donald Trump, who
the God King,
who put out a tax reform proposal in Springfield, Missouri yesterday. I don't know. Everyone's watching Hurricane Harvey, so maybe they're not paying as much attention.
Yeah.
But I am an incredibly strong critic of this president, but I like his tax proposal.
Interesting.
Hey, look at you, Natalie, coming on the Trump train.
He's
there
clearing
you are.
The codes of tax breaks. He's giving some tax relief to middle income, and he's wants to take care of the corporate income tax, which is among the highest in the world. This is policy I like.
Well, and there's conversations all over the country. Of course, as a tax nerd, right, the first thing I was really excited about was this announcement. I know we hadn't talked about it pre-show, but the idea, and you see Senator Mike Lee, you see the U.S. Senate kind of lining up and saying, hey, this is probably the time to deal with this tax issue. Now, what I'm hoping they don't forget in all of this tax rigmarole, and it wasn't mentioned before, was the online sales tax issues and the remote sales transactions.
Our producer's sort of like, well, you guys get off taxes, so let's go to something that KCPW audience would really like.
More Trump?
Bears ears.
I was going to go to Twilight concert series.
Oh.
Dan looks down, the Riverton guy looks down like, what is that or whatever. Yeah. But they're saying the Salt Lake City Council may not have the money for it next year. That's a big, you know, I have millennials. They love these concerts.
It's a big deal. They need to figure out how to do it. you know, there's plenty of dough rattling around in there. And
I'll tell you this. We're spending $67 million the next 2 years in the Rio Grande area cleaning up the lawlessness. And they've been pulling 5-gallon buckets of hypodermic needles out of that park in preparation for the Twilight Series concert on a weekly basis. We expect to not have that kind of labor cost to prepare for that concert coming very soon. So hopefully the preparation of that concert would not be as prohibitive.
Yeah. You can't just have a desolate void area the way it is now that everybody's gone. When you drive around, you gotta be positive. You gotta bring things in. It seems like that's more important to establish now than ever in that neighborhood.
Greg, you're at the center of this storm, homeless services, Operation Rio Grande. What new news could you break or tell the listening audience?
It's been a wild week, and I know that there's been a lot of we have had a frail coalition. Remember back in like 91 when you had Israel and Saudi Arabia on the same side on this desert shield and desert storm, and it was real frail. This coalition's more frail than that. Okay, this is Salt Lake City, Salt Lake
County, city, state.
We've all decided to get outside of our lanes and say we're going to do something so comprehensive, so multi-jurisdictional. It has not been seen truly since the Winter Olympics. And if you think about the Olympics, you had years to get ready for that.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more fun to talk about the Winter Olympics and the lawlessness and the crime and the drug trafficking going on here. We have come together. We've had some bumps in the road, clearly. But I will tell you that I could not be more proud of people that are not used to working with each other. Budgets, whether you talk the federal dollars for Medicaid expansion that Representative Dunnigan passed, and we're looking for the waivers that would bring more federal dollars to bear. You're looking at state budgets, county budgets, city budgets. We are, and even service providers' budgets. We are what I've called harmonizing those budgets.
Yeah, well,
and that's an efficient delivery, and I couldn't be happier with that overall process. We get bumps in the road, but we are making a great headway over there.
Jim, I'll pretend like the speaker's not in the studio audience and just do what I would normally do and ask you, did you listen to the Doug Wright program where the speaker and the mayor kind of had some words?
I didn't hear it.
I just grabbed my popcorn and just started eating. It was delightful.
But you know what? Look, this is a difference between Hughes and Herbert. You know, Greg is wrong a lot of the times on issues. And I want to talk to him about Medicaid expansion here because his position is preposterous. But nonetheless, you know what? He's a leader. He's motivating people. He's getting it done. He's got an opinion. You can talk to him. You can do it. Governor Herbert, there's no pulse of leadership. He just kind of puts whining coalitions together, whether it's on education or facing. If you're in the governor's office for 10 years and you can't point to terrific thing that's
like
been accomplished.
Like the second longest economic expansion in our state's history.
It might well have happened otherwise. Where's the leadership in that?
But I will equivocate with you slightly, and I will say, at the end of the day, Governor Herbert is good at people who do lead, letting them lead on issues that matter. And I think in this scenario, it's clear that the speaker is obviously leading on the homelessness issue, but it's really sad. I'll say this, we don't really have gripes today because we're going to talk about the things we love about the show, but it is my gripe that the Attorney General has just sat back on his hands and done squat.
And I have to be fair, Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox has been shoulder to shoulder with me. There's been some tough calls, and you cannot be shy in this space that we're in. You have to be bold. And
he's been bold.
It is absolutely.
I didn't say that about Cox.
Yeah, but I just wanted to say that I wanted to make sure you knew that in the executive branch or in the governor's office, Lieutenant Governor and I have been able to work very well together.
Guys, we're winding down the show. We want to just share a favorite.
Will you be his Lieutenant Governor?
We want to share a favorite both sides of the aisle memory. And Jim, we'll start with you. Favorite both sides of the aisle memory.
You got 20 seconds.
You know, okay, I'll do it even less. I loved it when Greg was just a normal guy, and he would bring all of these Republicans in. I mean, Mike Noel sat here, and they all just came.
Kane County and both sides of the aisle.
And it was fun, because afterwards we go, okay, how's it going? How's it looking? How's the voting going? You know, and I had to say, you know, I couldn't say, gee, I hope he wins. So that was just a good memory.
Greg, your favorite both sides of the aisle memory?
Oh, my mom is Jim has a dog. We think it's a dog. I've never seen anything like it before. And he would bring this thing.
Ugliest thing.
And this is a small studio. And if this thing turns on us, there's going to be blood. I mean, this thing was horrible. You bring that dog in here, and its name is Chihuahua.
Dan, we'll end it with you.
My favorite at Remory is the fact that we never lack for content. We can just put, you know, we can literally keep this thing going. We go for days.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. In the studio, Greg Hughes, the Speaker of the House, joined us. Thanks for being here, Greg.
Happy to be here.
On the left, we've had Dan McKay, and on the right, Jim DeBacchus. I didn't get a chance to share my favorite memory, but I'll just say, let's not talk about sports on Both Sides of the Aisle, because I can never, I've called him Stephen Curry instead of Steph Curry. Yeah. I've referenced Ty Corbin instead of Quinn Snyder.
We're
so
a mess,
we'll stay with politics and public issues. Hey, thanks for listening. Our program's produced by Emily Means. 200 episodes. Stay with us, listeners. We love it.
Happy to.